This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And join us right now as we hit the skins at 7 o'clock on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline is John Keim, covers the Redskins for ESPN.com. John, I heard you ask Jay Gruden about the running game and why they were able to be successful running the football. What are your theories? Because it's every other game for this team.
It is, and it makes a huge difference. I don't think this team's going to be able to win if they don't have a consistent run game. I just don't think that their passing game is set up to offset what they might not get from the run game. So, yes, it was very important. I thought yesterday there were a couple factors. One, I think Adrian Peterson is getting more comfortable with what they're doing, especially like out of the gun. That's a new thing. I wouldn't say it's a new thing for him because he's done it. It's just that it hasn't been something he's excelled at, and so he's had to learn in those situations to run with more patience. On a couple of the runs in the first half, you definitely saw him running with more patience out of that, better yardage results. I thought the blocking in that area was better. There were a couple times on the outside, and I was just watching this morning, where Maurice Harris and Michael Floyd, both bigger physical guys and the guys they replaced, were very good blocking downfield, and it got Peterson like an extra 6 or 7 yards. And I think the last factor yesterday, and Gruden brought this up in the press conference, was at times they were able to spread it and run. So they created some six-man boxes, which they have had before, but they were able to just block better and run better out of that. But it's something spreading it too. So I think those factors added up and helped them yesterday.
John, are the Redskins optimistic that they'll have Chris Thompson back for the Dallas game? What's the latest on his status? And same for Jameson Crowder.
That I don't know yet. I think we'll find out that a little bit more today. My understanding with Thompson is that from the jump last week, that he wasn't going to go. So that's never a good sign for even the following week. So I'm not sure at this point. And with Crowder, the same thing. I think we'll get a better feel. I think, you know, he didn't practice at all last week. Thompson was at least at times limited. But again, when, you know, from what my understanding was, you know, I heard this on Saturday that he was not going to go at any point. So I don't know. I don't have a good answer for that just yet.
So Josh Norman got a lot of criticism the week leading up to this game after the New Orleans game. We started hearing more reports about the headphones, the incident like that. D'Angelo Hall came on our show, talked about him being more concerned with Hollywood than game prep. And
yeah,
then Josh Norman delivered.
I want to thank you guys for that interview because it kind of fed us for a couple of days.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of drama surrounding Josh Norman. And I think, look,
it led to a golden quote by Norman about he was Hollywood coming out of his mama's womb. I mean,
Exactly.
So anyway, go on.
But I think the criticism was valid because, you know, we saw him get beaten and it looked like he missed coverages. And if you just look at it statistically, look, he had an interception in 20 games.
Yeah.
A lot of people point to the money he's making. But you know what? He delivered yesterday, and he's got a knack for punching the football out.
He does, and he has talked about that, about his ability to do that. That is, I mean, you see it on the film. It's like he is punching that ball. He knows when and where to, you know, when and how to do it very well. And so that's really good. On the interception, good pressure from the defense, I mean, which they did not do enough of most of the game. But on that play, pressure leads to an underthrow. He's in the right spot, and he played it well. And listen, in the, even like against New Orleans, that the touchdown he gave up was horrible. And that's happened, but it was, you know, but the rest of that game, he wasn't bad. I mean, he wasn't bad at all. It's just that he hasn't made the game-changing, game-saving type plays that he made yesterday. And that's why when you want the big money, that's when you get it. And even with, like, you know, I know there was, you know, the defensive backs got together on Tuesday and had a big meeting. And, it, you know, when I talked to Quentin Dunbar about that, and he said it wasn't about X's and O's basically are about their performance. It was about basically trusting and do you love your teammates? Do you play for your teammates? And I think, you know, there was probably some of that directed with Josh, and I think you know, Craig Hoffman had a lot on that this morning. And when you would hear Swearinger talk about preparing, I had somebody in the organization say, listen, when he's saying that, he's talking about one guy. And so I think there is something there, but he responded well. It's not like I said, it's not like he's been playing terrible. He hasn't. It's just that there are a couple plays that jump out, and you expect better from a guy getting paid that much.
Now, if you look historically at this matchup, Cam Newton, you know, coming in this game was 4-0, had 11 total touchdowns, no picks. That obviously changed yesterday. And the focal point for Carolina's offense, John, you know this, is McCaffrey. I mean, they like to give him the ball a total at least 20 times, if not more, and maybe some 25 times. They were able to bottle him up. What was their game plan going in, and how did they achieve it?
Well, first of all, I think the score helps that too. And I think to me, the biggest play in that game was on the fumble, on the punt return, because it changed. It gave them some life, some momentum right away. And then the next drive they score, and I think it put Carolina in a hole that I think it was just hard for them to stick with necessarily exactly what they wanted to do with McCaffrey. But there were times where they were clearly aware of where he was. I think Carolina does a great job of creating headaches and with their motion. And with the pre-snap motion, they do a ton of it. And you saw Olsen getting open a lot of times off of that against man coverage and running into traffic and all that. But I think they did a good job of making sure they knew where McCaffrey was. And there were a couple times where, you know, he's running to the outside, and Zach Brown diagnoses it fast, gets upfield, corners played run support well at times against him. And, you know, I think then it comes down to cutback lanes, too, because that's where he does a really good job. They do a good job of creating, again, pre-snap confusion with their motion and creating cutback lanes off that, and I felt like they were better in that area as well.
Joined by John Keim, covers the Redskins for ESPN.com. Unless the Redskins play teams like the Pats, Chiefs, Saints, or Chargers, I like their defense's chances, but I just don't think they can hang with those teams I just mentioned, or teams that are kind of around that same sort of scoring prowess. And they've got a couple of those teams coming up on the schedule. I know it's looking a little bit forward, but they have to play both the Falcons and the Bucks. And those teams, while not great defensively, those teams can put points on the board. I just think this defense is good against teams that score like low to mid-20s, but once you get like around the 30s, they're going to struggle.
Yeah, and I think a lot of teams probably would too, but yeah, I still, listen, there's still, I think what this defense can't do is look at what happened yesterday and just say, okay, you're there. I think you have to use this as a building block, and there's still some things you want to see. You want to see better pressure out of the four-man fronts, and early I thought like the first game or two, like there was some of that, but it hasn't been there, and I thought like yesterday, too often in the second half, Cam Newton was way too comfortable, and you can't give guys like that. And if you're playing a Julio Jones, obviously, you know, you give Matt Ryan extra time, and Julio Jones is going to kill you. So, or Calvin Ridley. So, you know, things like that. So I think that's something you have to improve upon or keep building upon for them. But, yeah, I mean, I think they still have a little bit ways to go, clearly. I think in those games, too, a lot would come down to what they do offensively. So I think it definitely works hand-in-hand with this group. And I think that's why the run game is so important for them. And it's not just about controlling the clock, it's about controlling the clock and scoring points. But they do that with the run game, and there's a trickle-down effect for them. So I think, you know, you look at the communication seemed to be better yesterday. I think that's a huge aspect for them. I think accountability seemed to be, you know, that was a big word last week for them. I think that needs to continue. Those are little subtle things that it's not just about talent for them out there. And they're not a top defense yet, but, we'll see.
Talking to John Keim, covers the Redskins for ESPN.com. One other thing that we talked about all week was, why aren't they getting the ball to Jordan Reed? And not that he had gaudy statistics yesterday, had 5 catches for 36 yards, but he was targeted 9 times. It's like they forgot about him on Monday Night Football. He's a huge integral part of the offense.
He is, and I'll tell you what, there were 2 other plays that he wasn't targeted, but he was looked at and drew the attention of several eyes that created opportunities for others. Both of them on touchdowns, and the Vernon Davis touchdown, that's where Alex Smith is looking. But the safety is flying over there, and it leaves the seam open for Vernon Davis. But there was extra attention paid to Reed because I think he was running like a wheel route or something like that, so you figure he may get the ball.
I think they lined him up Richardson, out wide, actually.
Yeah, and Paul Richardson's touchdown, and I love when they do stuff like this. You run the stack with him, and you look, and when Paul Richardson breaks inside to the back of the end zone, there are three eyes on that side. The defenders are looking at Jordan Reed. Now that's where Alex Smith is looking too, but that's where their focus is. So he then creates an opportunity for Richardson to sneak behind the back in the end zone to get wide open. That's how it happens. So that's also the impact of Jordan Reed. I felt like I didn't look at a snap total yet. It was more. I felt like they had to play him more. I feel like at this point in the season, you can't keep talking about the toes. Either you can go full or you can't. You know what I'm saying? So I think he needed to be out there more, and they did it, than he was. There were sometimes, it's funny because there were a couple of times where I felt like he stayed too long with Jordan Reed on a couple of occasions. End of the half on the third down where you have Capri Bibbs open over the middle, you dump it to him, you get a first, you get it a better field goal range. Instead, he's just kind of eyeing Jordan Reed. But I think that showed to me the intent to get involved. They know how important he is. They absolutely do. And so they know how badly they need to get him the ball. I think it was evident yesterday, and it needs to continue for them.
So is this who they are offensively? I mean, they ran for 132, almost five yards per carry. Smith passed for 163. Smith, statistically, if you look at it, John, he's 23rd in the league in yards. He's 25th in the league in yards per attempt. So is this who they are? I mean, they're just kind of a ball control, not very explosive, no quick strike type of offense? Or can they win games when they're scoring 35 points?
Well, they just did. Can they score them 35? I don't know, and we haven't seen that. I don't think they're going to be that kind of ball. I don't think they have that kind of talent at the skill position to do that. Now, Paul Richardson is not healthy. Jamison Crowder doesn't play. Chris Thompson doesn't play. Those are, now I will say, even losing Crowder, I thought Maurice Harris came in and did a nice job, and blocking and receiving. And so I can't say that there was this major impact there, but I think, when you lose some guys like that, it definitely hurts. But yes, I do think this is more who they are. When Darius Geis went down, I felt like there was going to be some issues here because I didn't feel like the passing game would be at that point where it could carry an offense for a stretch. I think you also have to say, okay, this is still a passing game that still has to kind of find its rhythm. I think the pass protection needs to be better. I think they do a bad job of picking up stunts, and that was evident again yesterday. That has to improve for Alex Smith to feel more comfortable in the pocket. I'm going to go back to a conversation in the summertime with Jay Gruden that I had about, can this offense be explosive? He said, yeah, but explosive in my mind can also mean imposing your will on the defense and scoring 20 points and winning. So that to him was his definition of explosion with this offense. And I think that's what we've been seeing. When they win, that's what they're doing.
So how are you feeling about the Cowboy game? That result yesterday was certainly very surprising.
It shocked me.
Yeah, I mean, they ran for 200 yards. That's what they do. I mean, they want to get Zeke going, but, Prescott was great running the ball, especially yesterday. Cole Beasley had a huge game. You just never know what to expect in the NFL, right? And that was one of those examples.
And especially with these two teams. And so I think the other hard part with that is they've clearly had an issue running the ball against the Dallas style of what they do with their defensive line. And that's, the Colts run that same style. They had a hard time there, even against favorable fronts. And so I think that's going to be something to watch this week, because if they don't do that, there are going to be issues. They've had a hard time stopping Ezekiel Elliott. This is partly why they drafted Daron Payne. Those guys need to show up, and those guys have been showing up, but they need to do a good job against him, obviously. And if you do that, then I think you can stop that passing game. If you don't stop Ezekiel Elliott, it's going to be a longer day. I think it'll be interesting to see if they can run the ball against that front. They do a lot of movement, and I think they've had some problems with that. So that to me is a big key for this week.
appreciate the time as always. That's John Keim, covers the Redskins.
Thanks,
for ESPN.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/decide. That's LinkedIn.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
After the Redskins games, we're lucky to be joined by former Redskins corner D'Angelo Hall on the Mattress Ross Hotline. He is driven by your D.C. area Acura dealers and the 2019 Acura MDX. Test drive the best-selling third-row luxury SUV of all time at your local D.C. area Acura dealer. Find the closest one to you at dcacuradealers.com. D'Angelo Hall, can you figure this team out? They are Jekyll and Hyde.
Yes, they totally are. I mean, it is so frustrating, like I said, from time to time, man, when you watch this team play, because they show so many flashes of being a very, very good team that can compete. And then they show signs of being a team that, like Trent Williams stated, could be picking in the top five of the draft. And so, I mean, it was encouraging, though, to watch those guys go out and beat a Carolina team that didn't play very well, but still had played well in previous games.
And D'Angelo, it's becoming pretty clear now through five games that the Redskins go as Adrian Peterson goes. He had 17 carries for 97 yards yesterday, a boom day for him. When he has a bust day like he had against the Saints on Monday night, the Skins don't really have a chance to win. But when they put it in his gut and he's rumbling down the field and he's able to get close to 100 like he did yesterday, Skins have a good chance to win games.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the formula for this team to win football games. And I think I stated it after the Arizona game. When this team is running downhill with Adrian Peterson and they give that offensive line a chance to catch their breath, because if they're just throwing the ball down in and down out, guys on the defensive line, they know that, and all they're doing is just giving every one of those old linemen their best pass rush move. But when you keep a defensive line off balance with them having to play the run and the pass, it slows them down. And, you know, you saw that. You saw that in this game. They did have to change their protection a little bit, though. Jay Gruden offenses typically love to get five wide out, or not five wide, but just five eligible receivers out as soon as possible. You saw them leaving that tight end in a couple times in protection. You saw them leaving that back end, having those guys chip and release late, because they know they have to, at some points in this game, they have to give those old linemen some help, and they were able to do that from time to time.
All right, D, let's get to the Josh Norman stuff. So you came on our show, you called him Hollywood. Josh Norman began a lot of criticism. Charlie Castle, he said, third best corner on the team. And what I'd say is you weren't making things up. The statistics show that Josh Norman was getting beaten as quarterbacks were facing him. I think quarterback rating of 156 throwing at Josh Norman. Mm-hmm. Us as fans were seeing, you know, blown coverages. And clearly he addressed it by having some sort of team meeting. I sometimes doubt team meetings. Teams have team meetings all the time. They win, they lose, whatever. But you know what? To his credit, he made a couple big plays in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the one was kind of a gimme, but you know, you still have to go get that ball. You know, you still have to catch it. And so he caught it. He did what he was supposed to do on that play. And just causing disruption, man. Causing disruption like he always does. You know, he was in on a couple tackles. He punched that ball out in typical Josh Norman fashion. And, you know, he got that defense energetic and hype to make plays. You know, he gave up, you know, some passes. So did Dunbar. But they made plays when they needed to. And like I said, no game's ever going to be perfect. No game ever was for me. And so I understand guys are going to catch balls. But ultimately, you want to make more plays than them, and this secondary made more plays than the Carolina receivers, and that's why they won this football game.
D'Angelo, I had to chuckle a little bit. I was looking at Twitter after the game yesterday, and Dan Steinberg from the Washington Post, from the Sports Blog, tweeted, "Only way for this week to end," and it's a screenshot of you and Josh Norman side by side on the NBC Sports Washington set. You guys are both like looking down, kind of away from each other. I'm sure it was just like, you know, like a quick snapshot, because I know you'll say these things to Josh Norman's face. It's not like it's something that you wouldn't, you know, tell
him
directly. But what was that dynamic like having Josh sit right next to you on the set last night?
I mean, it was great. It was great. You know, we were able to address a couple things in that sit down, and we ultimately cleared the air. I think a lot of people felt like it looked a little awkward when we first sat down. but by the end of the conversation, man, it was all hugs, and you know, it was all hugs, man. So, like I said, I root for him as well as a bunch of other guys in that locker room, man. And so, you know, like I told him, I want to see you shine. I want to see this team and this defense shine. And y'all keep playing the way you played yesterday, and we'll all be very proud of the outcome.
Do you guys consider yourself friends?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So you talk to him other, you know, outside of football?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I do.
Well, I would say this. Just my impression is the message was that maybe he wasn't as prepared as he needed to be. That whether it's Hollywood, whatever, that he was missing coverages. And I think the message was received, because what Josh talked about after the game with you and with others was being part of a system and being prepared. And that's what you need him to do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what you need every guy in that locker room to do. Just prepare to the best of their ability. And so, you know, those guys played. They played, they fought. You know, you still would like to see this offense do a little more, because they're going to need to in these close physical matchups that we're about to come down this stretch and have to play. And if this defense does what it does, like I said, the offense has to at some point step it up a little bit more, just be a little bit more consistent and be able to throw that ball downfield. And they did a little bit of that. I kind of noticed in the first 10 plays, this offense threw the ball downfield more than it did in the whole Saints game. And so, you know, just doing that as well. And we forget at times, Chris Thompson wasn't out there.
Right.
Jameson Crowder wasn't out there. You add those two more weapons, hopefully you are able to do a lot more with this offense and push that ball downfield and get a lot more guys involved.
Talking to D'Angelo Hall. Now, of course, these guys were your former teammates, but you practiced against them. What we also saw and what we were scratching our heads after the Monday Night Football game was, why aren't they throwing the ball to Jordan Reed? He had two targets against the Saints. He didn't have a great statistical line yesterday. I think 5 catches for under 40 yards, but they did target him 8 or 9 times. Same thing, Vernon Davis with 3 targets. The strength of this team's not the wide receivers, right? They're going to have to go to guys like Jordan Reed. They even ran a 3 tight end set at one point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the best player on this offense, I think, no doubt, is Jordan Reed. And so it is puzzling why they don't seem to get him the ball more. But, you know, it was nice to see him get some catches, because it wasn't that Monday night game where he didn't get a target until middle of the third quarter. And so at least he was able to get a couple targets. But, you know, you're absolutely right. It was a couple times I saw Alex out there, and I could tell it was man-to-man coverage. They had Jordan Reed spread out wide, you know, on the play I'm thinking of. Thomas Davis was out there covering him. And Thomas Davis was an athletic linebacker, but Jordan Reed had beat him 10 out of 10 times. And I don't even see Alex look that way, and Jordan runs the perfect route, and he's wide open. And Alex goes to the other side of the field immediately and throws the ball over there. That's an incomplete pass. And I said to myself, like, you know, when you know it's man-to-man, you have to go with your best guy. And your best guy is Jordan Reed in that situation. And I'm like, and you pray it's not against their best guy. 9 out of 10 times it's your best receiver against the team's best corner. This time it's your best receiver against the team's not-so-good cover linebacker. That is the matchup you want. Why didn't you go there? And so it's certain things that Alex has to do too, to help give Jordan the ball as well. But they definitely need to be scheming up a way to get that man at least 8-9 targets a game, like all the other teams who have great tight ends do.
Although on that fourth down call, which I like them going for it on fourth down, it looked like he was staring at Jordan Reed the whole time, still threw it his way, couldn't get it. It was covered. I wanted to flip to the defense. What are you seeing from the lack of pass rush? Why isn't Ryan Kerrigan getting to the quarterback? He's getting close. Why isn't Preston Smith? I mean, I'm looking at 5 games, 1 sack combined between these two.
And you know, that's a tough question, because I haven't sat there and just iso'd those two guys. I've been more so looking at the secondary, because that's kind of been the emphasis through the first couple of weeks. But I'm gonna have to really sit out and watch, because I don't know if it's an effort thing, if it's a luck thing, where you know I'm almost there. As soon as I'm there, the ball's thrown. You know, we had a lot of those over the last couple of years. But you're right, Ryan was still always able to get to the quarterback and get those sacks and put up double-digit numbers. And so to be through this many games and for him to only have had one sack and Preston zero, you know, it's perplexing a little bit. But, you know, they are generating pass rush. They are. I don't know if it's just because, you know, those guys up the middle are coming so quick. But I'm going to have to sit down and really break it down and figure that one out for you guys and let you know really what I see. But, you know, you can never get too worried about where the sacks come from as long as they're coming. And the defense has been able to get to the opposing quarterback.
Mm. Not that often. They had one sack.
Yeah, they're struggling.
So, yeah. I mean, they had one sack, but, I mean, it was Cam Newton. It was a guy you probably weren't supposed to get any against. But, you know, just think about Aaron Rodgers, them being able to keep him in the pocket and him never really feeling like, you know, where he was at his most dangerous, where he's out that pocket extending plays or, you know, having all day in the pocket like we saw Tom Brady have last night. You know, we're able to, you know, get in teams' faces.
So they're going to face another quarterback next week who can run a little bit. He did yesterday.
Yeah.
He ran for 80 yards against Jacksonville and Dak Prescott. So give me your thoughts on this game. This is obviously a big one, considering that Dallas won yesterday 40-7, very surprising score. But they ranked 29th in the league in passing. They only scored 8 points against the Panthers, 13 against the Seahawks, and 16 against the Texans. So they're not explosive. You know, they obviously have one of the best backs, but this is a big one. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a bad time for us to play a Dallas team coming off of the way they won. I bet that'll be a confidence booster to those guys. But I think we match up pretty well against them. You know, we spoke a lot about Carolina's offense and that run offense particularly. And to see this defense able to stuff that run offense, it gives you hope and it lets you know, hey, we know Dallas is going to come in here and try to establish the run game, because they can't beat you passing. They haven't shown that ability to beat you passing. And so we know as long as we don't blow anything on the back end, they'll be able to cover Dallas's receivers. And it's about stopping that run. It's about stopping Ezekiel Elliott. He poses a different challenge than McCaffrey. McCaffrey was a little more shake and bake. This guy's a big bruiser. And so, you know, we don't typically do very well against big bruising backs. So I'm interested to see what kind of game plan they come up with to try to stop Ezekiel, because, you know, he's as he goes, it's kind of how Dallas is going to go.
D'Angelo, let's pivot to some fashion here for a second. Pretty cool of Swearinger to wear the Sean Taylor jersey. He walked into FedEx yesterday, right?
Oh, man, absolutely. And he's a guy, he knows the history of the game.
Yep.
And so, you know, he's always talking about Sean. He's a big Sean Taylor fan. And so, you know, absolutely pay tribute to that guy. I want to say he's done it a couple times since he's been on the Redskins. He's worn that jersey. So, you know, this was a game that was a Sean Taylor type of game, man, because it was a game they had to have. And that secondary, after what they had put on TV, on film, on national TV, they had to respond, and respond they did.
Was there anything else around the league that surprised you? You know, we obviously talked about the Dallas game. Anything else outside of that game that surprised you yesterday?
Not really. I guess as bad as I did not think that Oakland would be as bad. I kind of thought they'd be a little better than they are.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, to me, that's probably the most surprising. I'm kind of like, wow, I can't believe Oakland's playing terrible football right now.
I mean, what's going on with Derek Carr?
I don't know. You know, this is a guy you paid a lot of money to, and you were expecting to be the next guy, the next leader of the top tier of quarterbacks. And, you know, he's not looking very good at all. And so, you know, that team's in, you know, in disarray, man. I think when you get rid of your best player in Khalil Mack, it's so hard to get guys, you know, that are that good. And so when you get rid of one, I mean, goodness gracious.
By the way, how much do players,
you're supposed to lose.
How much do players hate going over to London to play?
I mean, I never played in London. I went with the team to London.
Yeah.
But so my mindset was a little different because I was kind of, you know, I was hurt, so I knew I wasn't playing. I was excited to go. I wanted to go. I kind of was like, yeah, you know, let's go check out London. But I didn't have the pressure of having to play. I bet those guys are like, man, are you kidding me? Because it's such a long, grueling flight.
Right.
It's such a long trip and such a short amount of time. You know, everybody's pulling at you. You got demands. You got to do this. You got to do that. And so at the same time, you got to try to stick to your normal routine of maintaining your body and watching extra film and doing all those things. And, you know, it's just real hard doing that out of a hotel.
You'd rather hang out with London Fletcher than go to London. Come on, let's be honest. Everybody knows that.
He sounds like he was looking
easy
forward
one.
To it.
Hey, D, I wanted to ask you, though. It sounds like you watched the game last night, and that was a 43-40 game won by the Patriots. We're talking about the Redskins being offensively challenged. Those two teams, how would you scheme against them? How do you stop those offenses?
Oh, man. That's a tough question because, you know, unless you have a talented secondary or a talented group of pass rushers and coverage guys, it's kind of tough to do that, you know. I think the only team, that's why I think everyone's kind of foreshadowing now because they see how talented this Rams defense is. They're able to apply pressure with just four guys rushing. They're able to, you know, they have a lot of DBs who can cover to lead. And Peters are still hurt, I think, right now, and they're still able to cover everyone. They're the only team that I feel matches up. I would have put Minnesota in that same category, but Minnesota's defense, you know, they've went from being one of the best in the league to the worst in their division. And so I don't believe in them right now. And so, you know, it takes a team with a loaded secondary who can match up because anyone else, I mean, they just don't have enough cover guys to match up with the amount of weapons that these guys can put on the field. And Tom Brady adding a guy like Josh Gordon who you can put on the outside, I mean, when he was playing was one of the best. It's tough. If we had to play one of those teams, it would be hard for me to go with us because, and you have to have an offense that can score points because
right. This
team's going to score. And so, yeah, like you said, it would be, you know, kind of close to the Saints game, you would think, outcome-wise, but, you know, it probably wouldn't get there the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Redskins aren't at that level. All right, always love having you on. D'Angelo Hall, thanks a lot, bud.
No problem.
Yep. He joins us every Monday after Redskins games. Right now, it's our Redskins beat reporter, Craig Hoffman. What's up, Craig?
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
So let's start before the game because you reported this. It's on thesportsjunkies.com. You reported that Josh Norman, after the Monday Night Football game, actually took some ownership on his role and called a team meeting. And tell us, kind of fill us in on what happened.
Yeah, so it's really interesting because Josh is a guy that is obviously very out front in terms of the media, and that was the crux of D'Angelo Hall's criticism on your show last week. But to his teammates, he is much more reserved. He is someone who is a little bit of a recluse, a little bit isolated, the kind of guy who's just kind of off in the corner by himself in the meeting room or, you know, as other guys are hanging out. He's there, but he's not really present. He's not really open. And so on Tuesday, he really opened up. First, he called a meeting. Second, he opened up in the meeting, much more about, as Kime said with you guys earlier, the way Dunbar described it was a lot more about chemistry and that kind of thing than it was any kind of X's and O's. And so what happened was that kind of that harbored a lot of good feelings. Those good feelings turned into better communication on the field, their best week of practice that they've had all year, and then a performance that really, in a lot of ways, I think we are going to look back on if this season turns around and goes well as a critical turning point in the season because the drama around Norman had a real potential to have, you know, kind of leave these shockwaves throughout the franchise where there were some career-defining decisions that were going to have to be made about him. But if he plays well and he is harmonious in the locker room and is not causing problems or causing stress and drama, then all those things go away. And so to see him play well, to see his teammates genuinely celebrate with him and really embrace him, that really was, I think, much more important than a victory in a single game. And it all started with this meeting on Tuesday.
Craig, in your opinion, is Josh Norman more respected or resented by his teammates because of his high salary and, you know, the Dancing with the Stars and, you know, the Hollywood aspect of his lifestyle? In your opinion, which one is it?
I think that before, like, I can speak a lot more at this point to the specifics of the DB room. And I would say he's a lot more respected now than he was last week. Like, that's how significant Tuesday might have been, where he completely changed the way I think everybody else in that room thought of him. I mean, you got to remember, DJ Swearinger and Josh Norman have known each other since they were in high school together in Greenwood, South Carolina.
Did they play at the same high school?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they played 2 years together. And it just didn't even, like, that stuff didn't even matter. They weren't super fond of each other. And, you know, DJ is this guy that puts in a ton of work and does all this film study. And the work that Josh puts in is different. It's not that he doesn't work hard, but it's a lot more the after practice, doing his own workout kind of thing. And their demeanors in the meeting rooms and how they approach studying is very different. And so when Josh had made these mental mistakes, it was treated very different than the way that a guy like DJ did. DJ, it's like, oh, he's, you know, he saw something on film. He's going to try to make a play and he guessed wrong, but it's okay because he's, we know how much studying he does. And with Josh, it's like, hey, will you pay attention? And so to see him completely kind of flip everything around and really embrace his teammates and tell them, like, I trust you, I need you, and I know you guys need me, and I'm going to be better, and then to go out and back it up, for the moment, it seems to have really flipped that. And I thought what was really interesting, too, is I asked, like, is okay, so that's nice, or do you ride this wave for a week, and then if you play poorly, does it change? And the person I was talking to about this goes, no, I don't think so, because we feel like we can call him out now and that he can call us out. So it was kind of a two-way street where if he got on someone else, they kind of rolled their eyes and be like, okay, yeah, sure. Just because you get paid a lot of money doesn't mean anything because you ain't playing that well and you're doing the stuff that's killing us on defense. And now they would respond differently and they feel like if he starts slipping or doing something different that they can talk to him and he will be open to listening.
You watch the film each week, and I know you haven't watched this game's film, but why aren't Ryan Kerrigan and Preston Smith getting to the quarterback? Is there something different this year? Are they dropping back in coverage more? What's going on?
Well, there's been a combination of a couple of things, as is typical. Some of it, some of these games, it really was, the ball just was out quickly, and it's really hard to fault them. But at this point, like, you've seen enough different types of offense, you've seen enough games that you should have fallen into a couple of sacks by now. I think for Kerrigan, you know, Preston doesn't always win. And, you know, he's a good pass rusher, but, there are times where he just gets blocked one on one. And that happens. He's got to figure out ways to win and counter and get pressure. For Kerrigan, a lot of times he's winning up the field and then just quarterbacks step up because he doesn't really get the proper depth and he doesn't ever counter. And I don't think tackles fear a counter move from him where he needs to go up and then go back underneath and he'll step right into the quarterback sometimes. Instead, he's just trying that rip move around the edge. And, you know, especially if he's never going to get a holding call in his entire life, which seems to be how he operates, even though he's held on a wide number of plays. A huge percentage of plays, he never gets the call. And so if you're just going to sit there and have your head be propped back and try to rip underneath a tackle's armpit, like, how about you punch down and swim back underneath inside? And so for Ryan, it's about getting that counter move and figuring out whether it's a spin, whether it's an up and under, to get home. And then for both these guys, it's getting a little bit faster on some of these stunts and twists that have given the Redskins offensive line so much trouble, but their defense hasn't really executed at a high level yet. They've got to figure out how to do that. Allen and Payne and Ioannidis have done a pretty good job. Even the pressures yesterday that mattered came from people other than those edge rushers. But for those guys, like, it's time. One is paid very handsomely, and the other wants to be paid very handsomely. And the thing you get paid handsomely for as an edge is sacks, and they have not produced so far this year.
All right, so let's shift to the offense. They put up couple touchdowns early, and as they've done in several games, they can't find the end zone in the second half. What's your theory there? Why aren't they able to convert drives into touchdowns in second halves?
It's a great question, and I think they're still very much trying to figure it out. I mean, Alex was great, obviously, in the first 15 yesterday. They figured out some plays that he likes. And then as the afternoon goes, the execution just isn't as sharp. Some of it was protection yesterday. Smith missed a ton of throws again. They really obviously made an emphasis this week. Like, let's get Reed involved. He had 9 targets, only 5 catches, but then he's got, you know, the 2 touchdowns, or he plays a huge role in as Smith stares him down, then goes somewhere else. But there's a couple plays in the second half where he really locks in on Jordan for too long. And some of those are on Alex, where he needs to move to somewhere else in his progression, quicker. But some of those are on Jordan too. And Jordan's got to understand that he can't always set up every single route, triple stick, and then go. Sometimes he's got to win with speed. Sometimes he's got to win with tempo. Sometimes you have to just go and trust that, you know, the way the coverage is going to let you to win without having to do 17 crossover steps or even 1 crossover step. And so I think that at times in the second half, he got kind of locked in, and for the reasons I just mentioned, the ball doesn't wind up as a completion, and that kills your drive. You know, a couple holding penalties here and there obviously hurt as well. So it's tough. I don't think that there's been a consistent answer, which in a way makes it more difficult, but they need to figure it out, because the fact that they have a winning record and have not had a good offensive second half yet is pretty astonishing.
Is this going to be who they are offensively, though? Just kind of relying on Peterson to get, you know, close to 100 yards, and, you know, maybe Smith gets to 250 passing, and they're going to average in the low 20s, and they just try and work the clock and
yeah,
ball
I
possession,
think so.
That type of stuff? I mean, is that who they are?
The way I've been describing this yesterday was it was the Alex Smithiest of wins.
Yeah.
I mean, it is exactly the formula that you go, I don't know how they won this game, but he does it all the time. And the reality is, once you kind of take a deeper dive, is you don't turn the football over. So that limits the number of possessions for your opponent. It also extends your possessions to try to milk the clock. It shortens the game. He converts enough third downs where, you know, a lot of those incompletions first, second down, you know, you get a couple yards rushing, you're in a third and manageable, he completes one pass, well, all of a sudden you got a new set of downs, you can milk another 2 minutes off the clock, and the game gets shorter and shorter. You just repeat that formula, and, you know, you get a couple of field goals, you convert a couple of touchdowns, and your defense creates a couple of turnovers, and you're in a really, really good position to win the game. And that's exactly what happened. It's tough when you don't have a running game that you can count on every single week, because if Peterson's banged up, like, man, how much longer can he do this at his age with all of these different injuries? But that's the formula that is going to give you the best chance to win with this guy at quarterback, because if he has to push the ball down the field, he's clearly not comfortable doing it. Even yesterday, they found a new kind of branch on their offensive tree by using some of their outside guys on underneath routes. I mean, Doxson had a slant that was called back on a penalty from Trent, and then the very next play they go right back to him on a stop route that I've been waiting to see all season. Like, teams play so far off of him and are terrified that the only thing he can do is run a go route. So just tell him to turn around, stop, and get 8 yards for free. And if they can do that, and Smith is comfortable throwing that, which he did a couple times to New Orleans, or against New Orleans to Harris, if he can do that to Paul, if he can do that to Josh, he can do that to Maurice and all these different guys, and start getting some of them involved, then maybe it becomes a more sustainable formula. But short to intermediate passes, running game, RPOs, that's the formula to win with Smith, and all of that stuff is a lot easier to call and a lot more conducive to success when you're ahead in the game.
Joined by Craig Hoffman, a Redskins beat reporter. All right, this is not definable, but I want your take on this, because you're in the locker room after the games. You're around these players. They win in week one. Everybody's optimistic. They lay an egg in week two. They surprise us and beat the Packers. Then they lay an egg against the New Orleans Saints. They win again yesterday. Maybe surprise some of us. Beat Carolina, a good team. Was the locker room different after this win, or does it feel the same? Because they need to break this streak and actually string something together.
Yeah, after the game, I would say there were still people that were mad about New Orleans, which I think is a good thing. Like, DJ Swearinger was still, like, upset about New Orleans and saying, you know, we have to be consistent. We have to be consistent. Like, this isn't good enough. Yeah, today was good. We beat a good team, but, like, we gotta do more. Gruden is always pretty pretty the same at the podium. Alex Smith is the same whenever.
Sure.
So it's some guys it's harder to tell than others. I think that there was a lot of the joyous moments that I was around were more to do with what Josh did. You know, guys legitimately happy for him to see him kind of come out of that. But there was a serious tone. Now, we'll see if that carries over to today and they can then, you know, come back on Wednesday and have another good week of practice and they can keep up that urgency and the communication and all the things they fixed between Monday and Sunday. It's a giant TBD, but at least in the immediate aftermath, I don't think they were overly impressed with themselves. And if they were, I would assume they saw the Cowboys score against what we thought was one of the better defenses in football, where they put up 40 points and run for 10 million yards, and they go, okay, well, we better get back to work. If that doesn't wake you up and say, we need to take this seriously, then I don't know what would. And I think actually the Cowboys beating the Jaguars like they did was probably one of the better things that could have happened for the Redskins, as opposed to a Dallas team that felt like it might have been limping in here based off some previous performances.
And if you had to guess, we talked to you about this during the Junkies pregame show. Chris Thompson, Jameson Crowder ultimately didn't dress. We're kind of on that borderline. If you had to guess, do you think they'll be available come Sunday?
Yeah, I now looking back, feeling like I didn't have as good of a read on it as I thought during the week. I mean, Chris was telling me Friday that he was going to try to play, and apparently that was never really in the card. So clearly it was out of his hands, because that's a dude that'll play through anything that they'll let him. So I'm curious to see. I mean, he was technically limited, but they could have just dressed him as almost a decoy to make Carolina prepare for him. And then once we left, like, hey, Chris, go inside. You don't have to practice anymore, or just stand here and watch. So I'm curious to see how active he is and drills and things like that when we get out there on Wednesday. We'll be in the locker room today, maybe get a chance to talk to him. Crowder, I know he was pushing to at least go through warmups. I kind of wonder if the weather had a little bit of an impact on that. So I feel a little bit better about Jameson, like he's going to at least try to practice this week. But we shall see. I mean, that's obviously a much tougher task. But the good news is yesterday you had guys step up and, you know, Capri didn't have like this insane game, but had a couple of nice plays and meaningful plays in there. You know, Maurice Harris did a nice job in the slot. So I think at the very least, Alex is comfortable with the replacements. But of course, they're the replacements for a reason. The other players, Thompson and Crowder, are better.
I said this real quick, Craig, before we let you go. I said this early in the show. If they can beat the Cowboys and the Giants and go 5-2, I think they're in the playoffs.
I think that's probably – I mean, I'd have to look at the rest of the wild card standings, but, like, that have to put them in great place in the division.
Now, that being said, they never win three games in a row.
Right, so. It's tough.
Right.
It's tough for me to do that.
It's a roll. And I feel like this is the thing we do where we get out ahead and, like, what if? And then it's like, oh, why did we even think about doing that? It's kind of what we were doing before New Orleans. But, yeah, no, I that thought crossed my mind this morning, too, where if they're at 5-2, like, they'd have to have – like, if let's put it this way. If they're 5-2 – I almost don't see a path where they miss the play or like they finish with some mediocre record and then Jay's still around. Like that would involve some kind of epic collapse. And if they can get things going and then it obviously health would play a role in that as well.
Yeah.
I feel like they could try to build some confidence, figure some things out. And I would think this team gets better as the year goes, especially offensively as Jay and Alex continue to figure each other out. So if they can build themselves a record cushion while they're still figuring it out, that's a hell of an advantage.
Craig Hoffman, a Redskins beat reporter. Check out his work at sportsjunkies.com, thefandc.com. Thanks, pal.
Yep, you got it. See you guys later.
Thanks,
in the
Craig.
Week.
Now, that being said, you know, if they go 5-2, the three games after that are Falcons, Bucks, Texans. All right. I could see them losing any or if not all of those games.
But you could see them beating those teams. The Texans
true,
are
true. I would like to see the stats 5-2.
Falcons have a losing record.
What percentage of 5-2 teams go to the playoffs? It's got to be pretty high.
Well, yeah, because if you just go 5-4, slightly above 500 the rest of the way. You're a 10-win team, and that usually
Correct.
Gets you in the playoffs.
Correct. So these next
praying
two.
For that Vikings-Redskins playoff game. Oh!
That would be great.
I can see it off in the distance.
So the next two are big.
I mean, I have something to look forward to over the next 3 months.
Who would you root for, Cakes? Who would I root for?
Oh, he'd root for Cousins.
He
would root for Cousins. You know you would.
I might have to root for old Kirky.
Even though that hurts us.
Yeah, it does hurt us, but... You know what? I'd ultimately root for my wallet. I think I'd root for this
game. He'd root for a monster Kirk game.
You're probably right.
But a squeaker loss.
That's probably the scenario I would envision.
Ratings bonus.
31-30 skins. You would love that.
Exactly.
All right, joining us right now to talk some NFL is Jason Lockenfora. He joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline from CBS, CBSSports.com. Hell of a game last night, Jason.
Yeah. Lived up to the billing. Was... I think is Not that, look, these games are, by and large, pretty hard to handicap, at least for me.
Oh, yeah.
This season in particular, but this one I think went as expected, right? Two teams that don't exactly scare you with their defense. Two quarterbacks who are pretty fearless. Two of the brightest coaches of their generation. Mm-hmm. And the guy who holds the ball last probably wins. And that guy in Foxborough, more times than not, many more times than not, is Tom Brady. And, you know, that's how it played out. There's no shame in Mahomes' game, the couple early turnovers. Look, he's a gunslinger. He's got Brett Favre in him. That's part of his makeup, and that's part of what makes him special. But he also has the ability to overcome that. And you know, that looked like a game that late first half, early second half, you thought maybe New England runs away and hides, but they never did, and the Chiefs came storming back. It was you know, somebody who has zero rooting interest in it, that was a fun football game to just sit back and watch these teams do what makes them great. And you had big plays from Gronk, you had big plays from Hill. I mean, it was, you know, the big name guys by and large stepped up, and that's New England, man. Good luck. You know, the road to the AFC for the Super Bowl probably goes through Foxborough at this point. I don't think the head-to-head tiebreaker with Jacksonville is going to matter all that much. I don't think Jacksonville's winning 12, 13 games like New England probably will. And now they've got a leg up on Kansas City. We already know that Pittsburgh never wins in Foxborough. So it should be interesting.
I saw that you retweeted something that Warren Sharp had tweeted, but he pointed out, imagine if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars looking back on drafting Leonard Fournette when you could have drafted Mahomes.
I mean, it's not even just that. It's like you could have signed Kirk Cousins. You could have signed Teddy Bridgewater or then traded for Teddy Bridgewater after the Jets didn't need him. You could have drafted Deshaun Watson. You could have, you know, I mean, you if the bar is Blake Bortles, you could have drafted Dak Prescott. You know what I mean? Like, that's a low bar. Okay, they beat the Patriots, and those in the world inclined to believe that this guy has turned some sort of corner, or that, you know, the Jags might finally be a balanced team, and they're the, you know, they're the number one team in my power rankings this week. Well, in four games since, he's got a QB rating of 75.51. He leads the NFL with 9 turnovers in their last 3 losses. This is a team, I think, we'd all agree that the Jacksonville Jaguars are not built to play from behind, right? Their own head coach came out before the season and said, knucklehead, just don't turn it over, okay?
Right.
Just don't turn it over and we'll survive. So their last 3 losses, Blake Bortles' first half QB rating is 45.51.
Wow.
So that's how you turn into, oh, we're the number one team, to, oh, we might not even win our own crappy division despite this defense. And it's not Leonard Fournette. He's not a game changer. He's a plotter. He lets you establish something.
Yeah, but they're much better with him. They're much better with him.
We'll see. The numbers up to this point really didn't bear it out. Now, when he comes back, you know, we'll see. The problem is he was hurt in college, and he's hurt last year, and he's hurt now.
He's always hurt.
When you rule a dude out on Mondays with a hamstring, it means he's probably not playing the next week either. So, you know, right now that's just a hypothetical, because he's probably not going to be in the lineup again next week, and we'll see about the week after that. But I don't think he's changing all this. I don't think he's going to get in Blake Bortles' head and convince him that dude you were for 4 quarters when Tom Brady was on the other sideline, that's who you really are. Because I think he knows in his heart, that's not who I really am. Mm-hmm. And that's not who he's been. And they've got big problems there. That's a weird division. It's kind of like your guys' division. It's kind of like the NFC East. You know, from week to week, who knows? But I don't think any of those teams is going to be flirting with a 1 or 2 seed.
So JP just asked us this question. In the AFC in particular, you know, you already mentioned the Pats and the Chiefs. Do you give any other of those teams a shot at winning the AFC? I mean, who knows with Pittsburgh, because we don't know about Bell, but I threw them in there just because you have to, especially if Bell's back. Are you a believer in the Ravens? Are you a believer in the Chargers?
I think the problem with the Chargers, they already lost at home to the Chiefs, and the Chiefs are not, even with their defensive problems, the Chiefs are not just going to fall apart. I picked the Chargers to win that division. I buy the Chargers roster. I always have trepidation about how that plays out on Sundays. The best team on paper doesn't always win, and when you're the Chargers, you generally find a way to lose. But I do think they're, you know, and Bosa's going to come back at some point in the second half. I think the Chargers are formidable. Again, I don't know that they can make up that ground on the Chiefs. I think the Chargers will be the wild card team that nobody wants to face. You know, they've got some interesting stuff coming up. I mean, they go to London to play next week. You know, if they can survive that, the schedule eases up for them. I do think, like, if I had to do AFC power rankings right now, you know, I think, look, the Chiefs and the Patriots are probably going to be the one and the two seed. And then I'd probably have the Chargers as my three. I think so little separates Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and Cincinnati, and they beat up on each other so much that I don't know. Again, I don't know that any of those teams gets to 12 wins. And I think New England and the Chiefs are getting there. So, but yeah, I mean, look, Baltimore to me is like the Redskins. I don't know what any given week I have no feel for them. Like whatever I say, I think is going to happen in their games. Bet the mortgage on the opposite because I can't get a feel for either team.
Jason, I'll go to the other end of the spectrum for your power rankings for the bottom team. Number 32 has got to be the Raiders. Did they make a $100 million mistake by hiring John Gruden? And it sounds like their rumblings, they may be willing to part with Derek Carr after the season.
I think they are trading Derek Carr after the season. I don't know why. At this point, it's clear that John Gruden wants nothing to do with Reggie McKenzie, and he was peddling some of their recent picks before the season. And he's open to trading. I mean, he's traded Khalil Mack. He wants to trade Carl Joseph. They would have traded Obi Melanfamu if he wasn't on IR. They're not playing last year's number one, Gerrion Conley. He got, like, oh, I think, six snaps 2 weeks ago. I don't know how many yesterday, but I was watching that game closely. I never saw him on the field. So they trade him. So at that point, why aren't you trading? Like, you're starting over. You want to control the next couple of drafts. If you can get a one and something for Derek Carr, and I don't know what his value will be by the time we get to January, the way this season's going. But people who run football teams last week, multiple of them told me they think you could get a one. Now, a couple said a one plus something. But regardless, I think he probably does it. His thing is about my guys, right? I want my guys, and I go out and get them, and I don't want anybody else to mess with them, and they're going to do it my way, and that's going to be the only thing they know. So, I mean, I could see him picking Keenum off the scrap heap, you know what I mean, as his old guy, and then drafting somebody. He's if he doesn't get the first overall pick outright, he's going to have the draft capital to go and get it. And getting his quarterback of the future and then rolling with the veteran for another year and a half and then breaking the young kid in when they finally go to Vegas. I believe that's where this is headed. Mm.
You think the Eagles start putting stuff together, and do they make – I mean, can they sustain, you know, a legitimate division winning run with those two running backs?
That division, possibly. But will they get home games beyond the first round as presently constructed? No.
Right.
And they're realist, and they're willing to make cold, sort of cunning, calculated decisions. And they didn't clear that cap space to do nothing. So – does it have to be Le'Veon Bell or Shady McCoy or Marshawn Lynch? No. Could it be Patrick Peterson? Could it be an offensive lineman? Could it be a combination of those things? I don't expect them to stand pat. They never do. In most years, Howie doesn't want to stand pat. In a year like this where you're trying to win back-to-back titles and really do something historic and do it with a different quarterback than you did it with last year, and with Jason Peters look like he's falling apart and some other guys getting a little long in the tooth and swapping out centers and losing running backs, I have a very difficult time thinking with, you know, what they played on Thursday. They've got 9 days till they play again. The trade deadline 2 weeks away. They're up to something.
And they also have three games. Like you said, they got a big break before the Panthers game next week, right?
Yeah, so they've got plenty of time to evaluate everybody else's film and see, you know, who's healthy and who's not around the league. And they were making calls a month ago on Le'Veon Bell. Now it's cooled, but all it takes is one phone call to get that crank back up. I don't see them coming out of this without making a move. Not when you've got teams like Arizona and Oakland that they're clearly sellers, and they've fallen so far off the pack, and they're not close to winning this year or next year. So draft picks to them are gold right now.
Yep.
Jason Lockenfor from CBS Sports. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
All right, bro.
You got it, guys. Have a good one. Thank you.
I mean, the Eagles have the Panthers, the kind of just looked at it, the Jags and the Cowboys all at home the next 3 weeks.
That's all right, this tasty. Is
before they have to play the Saints in New Orleans.
Okay.
So these next 3 weeks, clearly all winnable, but they probably do have to address that running back situation.
I just see 9-7 winning the division this year.
9-7, 10-6 maybe.
You got the Eagles at 3-3, and yes, I believe they can take off, but it just doesn't seem like it's going to be one of those years. It's going to be
might not be
a tight division, excluding the Giants, who have clearly separated themselves at the bottom.
Yeah, they seem especially bad. Outside of Saquon Barkley and Beckham, if he's not going crazy on the sidelines.
Yeah, it's going to be nuts. There's, I mean, a few of these divisions are really going to come down to the last week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.